This is Bristol Bay and Beyond for Friday, June 12th on KDLG. I'm Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. Coming up in the next half hour, Representative Bryce Edgeman offers a quick update on his way back from the legislative session that gaveled out yesterday.
The deficit for FY16 alone was well over $3 billion. And so we're looking at about maybe 2.5 years, give or take, of actual reserves left to fund government.
We'll follow a first salmon of the season from the beach to the table of an elder and follow around some of Dillingham's dedicated garage sale junkies.
The whole box.
I collect wool.
Everything in the box. Look at that. Watch.
$10.
Listen.
A set netter tells us about a trip to bring a new boat from Homer across Cook Inlet, Lake Iliamna, and down the Quijack River to get back to Bristol Bay this year.
It was good because the water turned muddy and I knew I was at home. And then I hit a sandbar and got stuck for 6 hours.
Those stories, plus one local singer-songwriter, reminds us why life is right here in the Bay.
Say hi, talk about the berries and the price of flights, the fish in the net and the long daylights, when companies are coming and the kings are running, well, life is right. If ever someone needs a helping hand, word of mouth spread.
That's all coming up after a look back at some of the week's news. Last Saturday, the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association held its annual member meeting here in Dillingham. Later, the board met and elected new officers, including longtime drifter Buck Gibbons as the RSDA's new president. Gibbons says he wants to direct more energy and effort towards meeting the marketing challenges for Bristol Bay salmon.
I understand that sustainability is important, and we will never lose sight of the fact that we need to protect this habitat and this watershed and all things that generate our livelihood. But at the same time, we need to get prepared for new market realities. And I'm not so sure if we're prepared for, or if anyone's prepared for, the marketing challenges that lie in front of us.
Larry Christensen will continue as the RSDA's vice president, and Lang Solberg, the secretary treasurer. Abe Williams, Pete Andrews, and Mike Frisera were also seated on the board during the meeting. Bristol Bay's halibut fishermen have had a good season. That's according to BBDC's fisheries coordinator Susie Jenkins-Brito.
So far this season in our 4E halibut fishery, we have landed 27,503 pounds, which is very exciting because our 4E halibut quota is set at 27,540 pounds. So we're just 37 pounds shy of reaching that quota.
She says they may move some area 4D quota over to the 4E fishermen. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council voted last Sunday to lower caps on halibut bycatch in the Bering Sea by 21% overall. What that means to BBEDC was covered in the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report online at kdlg.org. In other fisheries news, pollock bee season opened Wednesday in the Aleutian Islands and eastern Bering Sea. Mary Furness is with the National Marine Fisheries Service in Juneau.
The total allowable catch is up for the Bering Sea pollock fishery this year. Compared to last year, about 43,000 metric tons, and the allocation is divided by the A season, which gets 40%, and the B season gets 60%.
This week, a group backed by sport fishing interests announced it had submitted 43,000 signatures to get a ban on set net fishing in non-subsistence areas on the 2016 ballot.
It's targeted at getting set nets out of Cook Inlet, and the group backing it is comprised primarily of sport fishing advocates from South Central. Whether or not that actually comes to a vote will depend on how the Alaska Supreme Court rules on the state's appeal of a lower court's decision to allow the ballot initiative to proceed. So still a little unclear. The state is saying the initiative is an unconstitutional appropriation.
Bristol Bay's Fisheries Report host Molly Dishner explaining there. Locally, the Eastside districts, fishing in the Eastside districts, will close today and begin to reopen on different schedules starting Monday. No substantial catches were reported yet. Port Moeller Test Fishery started their efforts on Wednesday with rough seas and few catches, and the sonar at Portage Creek on the Nooshigak River started counting a week ago. Area manager Tim Sands says the Wood River count starts late tonight.
The Wood River Tower crew is in. They're going up there this afternoon. They'll get the tower set up and hopefully start counting at midnight. So the 13th will be the first day of counting.
Sands says he will open the district to fishing when the sockeye count from the Wood hits 30,000. Combine set netter Jim Marksmiller told us this week that preseason prep is about done and he's just waiting for that word to go.
Whenever Tim Sands says, go, which could be any time next week, I believe.
Others around the harbor are also getting anxious to get into the water.
The boat's pretty much ready to go. We just got nets hanging forever. And then we're going to put them on the boat and we're ready to splash.
That's Mava, who fishes on the drift boat Mr. Fox, and put to words a common sentiment around the bay's boat harbors this week.
I'm so ready. I'm ready to be on the water. I'm over this boatyard, this mucky, muddy, rocky craziness here.
In other news, the first load of wood bison bulls were successfully released into the wild in the Anoka River Valley this week. 12 of them traveled by barge from Nenana towards Shagaluk, where they found a herd of cows and calves awaiting their company. The fishing vessel Northern Pride that caught fire and sank in April off Kodiak Island, then later washed ashore on Katmai's Shelikof Strait coast, has been salvaged. Katmai's staff said the salvaging company removed all debris and there was no sign of fuel spill at the site. The Ute Air Cessna 207 that crashed in the Queethluk River last month, killing pilot Blaze Highlander, apparently struck a 30-foot-tall birch tree before it ended up in the river. Investigators don't yet know why the pilot was flying at that low altitude. Highlander was taking the Cessna on a post-engine maintenance check flight that Saturday morning. And one of the boys responsible for vandalizing the Togiak Clinic last December pleaded guilty this week as part of a plea deal with the prosecution. Brett Pock, age 18, entered a guilty plea to a charge of second-degree burglary and will be on probation for the next 3 years. He and another boy, a minor, will probably owe more than $10,000 in restitution for the burglary. Those stories and more can be found, more on those stories rather, can be found at our website, kdlg.org. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond. The legislative session wrapped up yesterday as lawmakers agreed to tap into the state's constitutional budget reserve to cover this year's operating budget. The session should have been over in April. Lawmakers gaveled out from Anchorage, where we spoke with Representative Bryce Edgman this morning as he was preparing to catch a flight back home. Representative Edgman, good to speak with you this Friday morning, and thanks for coming back on the program.
You bet, Dave. Glad to have everything done and be heading home.
Well, let's talk about that. Seems like it wrapped up yesterday. Can you give us an overview?
Well, the budget looks a lot like the product that left the House actually when we were in Juneau, believe it or not. There are a few small changes. The base student allocation portion of education is fully funded at 5880. We didn't get the one-time funding of $32 million, but at least we got the BSA portion, and that was hard-fought and well-earned. And got $250,000 more for public broadcasting, I might add. I thought that was very important. And so all in all, basically the same budget that we left Juneau with a few other items added into it, and an honoring of the union contracts for almost $30 million, but asking the executive branch, the governor and his agencies, to go in and find the cuts, the efficiencies, in order to fund that $30 million. So the 2.5% increase goes forward this year, but not, again, with any money in the budget to support it.
Lawmakers have decided to tap the state's kind of what's called the rainy day fund, the constitutional budget reserve, to pay for the deficit this year. How much is that deficit, and is this a move you still support?
Well, we had no choice. The deficit for FY16 alone was well over $3 billion. And so we're looking at about maybe 2.5 years, give or take, of actual reserves or state rainy day accounts left to fund government. And I was among those small group who signed a letter opposing the permanent fund earnings transfer mechanism that would have subverted the three-quarters vote. That's kind of a whole different story, but in the end, I'm pleased the way things turned out, Dave, and again, very happy to be heading home.
One of our colleagues reported that it cost in the neighborhood of $500,000 to keep this overtime session going. What is there just a general sense of frustration amongst all at how long it took to get this year's business done?
Well, I would say absolutely, and clearly a huge sense of relief that we somehow got everything ironed out and an agreement reached. But, you know, I don't think it was lost on a single legislator that the clock was ticking and that the costs were mounting. And really, in the end, and what we compromised was something that, at least I think, should have been arrived at a long time ago.
This gets us through this operating budget year, but what's our long-term outlook now? And is there some concern about repeating this process next year?
There definitely is concern about repeating this process next year, but I would say that all of us collectively in the legislature, the governor's team, and everyone else learned a lot of lessons along the way this past spring.
So I would expect that the struggle to get the three-quarters vote next year, I think, will be a lot more manageable, and the legislative leaders will try to get things into place earlier in session so we don't have this great big fight. But, boy, looking forward long-term, Dave, it's be very challenging for all of us as Alaskans to make our budgets meet the expectations of a lot of people who depend heavily on essential services throughout the state.
Representative Bryce Edgman on his way back to Dillingham from Anchorage, talking to us from the airport this Friday morning. Bryce, thanks for the update, and we'll see you back here in town.
Absolutely, Dave. My pleasure, and we'll talk soon.
Celebrating the first salmon of the season is a long and important tradition here. Last Friday, we turned Hannah Colton around on her way into work when we heard some boys had caught theirs on the beach and were going to take it to one elder. Hannah Colton followed along and later brought us back this report.
A text message from Robin Cheney told me her boys had caught three kings on the morning tide. They and their grandpa were going to make a delivery. Here's Tristan Cheney.
Yeah, we caught three this morning. Gave one to my mom. Kept one, and then one to Ophi.
So why do you bring one to Ophi?
Because we always give some of what we catch to elders, and then if you give stuff to your elders, then you're going to catch more.
Hjalmar Ophi Olsen is an elder who's left a mark on Bristol Bay, as few have. He fished these waters for some 5 decades, starting as a kid in the sailboat days. He was a longtime director, CEO, and president of the Bristol Bay Native Corporation, among other leadership roles. But he's retired from all that now. Ophi is in bad health. His kidneys are failing. And these days, it's tough for him to get too far from the house. He was sitting on the couch when the Cheney boys and his old friend Robin showed up with that 12-pound king.
Just sit tight, Ophi. The boys brought you a king, Sam.
King salmon?
Yeah.
Where?
That one.
Oh, yeah, small one.
Small one. We caught it this morning.
He sized up the boys who brought him the fish. Gave Robin a nod.
Okay.
Bye. Enjoy.
Yeah. Thank you, Robin.
You bet you.
Boy, that's going to be a treat to have.
That evening, some old friends and fishermen came together to eat that fish with Ophi. They gathered around a humble table at Jerry Lieboff's house, off Chuthmuck Road, named for Lieboff and his patchy clothes. Dave Bendinger grilled the fish for an hour on top of a cedar plank, and Ophi again asked for the recipe.
Pickles.
Put that thing on the plank.
45 minutes.
45 minutes.
Yeah, wet it first. Let it cook maybe 10 minutes. Then flip it so it's charred. And then put the salmon on top, skin side down. Lid down, let it...
Any good?
Oh, this is plank.
I'm going to bring you some planks.
Set netter and Russian Orthodox priest Father Victor Nick stopped by for a bite and gave a blessing.
Okay, before we eat too much more, why don't you bless the meal?
May Christ our true God bless his food and drinks and assurance below, and has that prepared them for the holy host on the church of his. Amen.
Amen. Okay. Now I hold it.
I am.
You don't want no
terrific?
You
don't have to. Maybe.
Ophi had said the fish was small, but there was plenty to go around. And it really was the best.
First king melts in your mouth.
Yeah.
Just like butter.
Lieboff asked Ophi about what it was like when the first kings came in when he was a small kid.
That first king salmon was a big deal even then, right?
Oh, yeah.
Your mama and grandma, yeah. How'd they cook it for starting? Boil it or what?
Well, the head and the tail and the igiamchuk and the eggs. If it had eggs, they make chowder out of it and out of the collars. And then you fry the steaks, either fried or boiled. It was good. Mm. Nothing, every bit of the king salmon was used. Nothing left but the bones.
Yeah.
And so the night went on, and around the table they sat. They talked about boats. They talked prices. They talked nets and canneries and can sizes. They cracked jokes and talked about fishermen from the old days. And they talked about getting older.
Well, Jerry, you got your boat up and running?
The graying of the fleet. The last of the hard asses trying to hang on.
Yeah.
Him? Oh, if I put up the white flag a few years ago, I'm hanging in there.
I don't want to be the richest man in the graveyard.
Yeah, right.
Maybe Skagerrak is bumping somebody else for that position.
That's Ofi, giving Skagerrak skipper Paul Friis-Mikkelsen a hard time. Friis-Mikkelsen took a hard fall a few weeks back and may not fish this season.
You know, at this point, it's not really about the money so much as it's just good being part.
It's
lifestyle.
Lifestyle. Mm-hmm. That's lifestyle. If I was well, I'd be out there, I think, drifting around a little bit too.
Well, yeah, but the thing I was starting to say was it's like being part of this whole cycle.
The whole bay is a cycle. The fish run out and back, tides come in and out, nets need mending year after year, and people gather around the table to tell stories and to fellowship around that first king salmon.
What I miss, Dave,
yeah,
is when I was small, young guy, even my first few years in high school, used to go with my dad and some older people, and say we went camping or something, mm-hmm, and then when the light went out, you stay there and tell stories, listen to stories. Boy, interesting. Mm. Lots of stories. Mm. Hunting stories, you know. Stories about ghosts.
With a twinkle in his eye, Ofi had a captive audience, and we all kept nibbling on that fish for hours after it got cold. In Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay and Beyond. One man's trash is another man's treasure, and that could be the mantra of a faithful few who frequent the garage sales here in Dillingham. KDLG's Matt Martin reports on what it takes to be one of the hardcore pickers.
Good morning, Josie!
Hey!
On Saturday morning, Josie Jensen shows up at John Hiano's house for his garage sale.
I even got cash, man!
Our one and only, Miss Josie.
Jensen is checking out a box of decorations and toys, including a dancing M&M.
The whole box.
I collect moves.
Everything in the box. Look at that. Watch.
$10.
Listen.
I could do that after a few beers and margaritas.
Yeah, I know. You and him?
Yeah, right.
Jensen is part of a core group of people who make sure to hit every garage sale in town. Her best friend, Addie Shade, has been by her side at all of them.
How many years have you been going together?
How many years, Josie?
I can't smoke that far back.
Let's say 20 years or so.
Okay.
We're always here.
Another frequent flyer of the garage sales is Steve Ito. He was there with his kids and had some insider tips on how to get the most out of a weekend of sales. First, he says make sure to plan the night before.
Well, you do have to do some research. Get on the Dillingham Garage Sale Facebook page and you can see what sales are out there.
Map out your route and make sure to have a pocket full of cash.
Moving sales are the best.
Why are they the best?
Because people are trying to get rid of stuff to move. So usually they have the best selection of things if you get there early enough, and that's another tip.
He says timing is everything in garage sailing. You have to get there right when the action gets started to get the best deals.
Or a little before, if possible, if they allow it.
Ito says he typically sees the same group of people at every sale. They've created friendships and friendly competition to see who can get the best deals.
It's just a fun subculture of, you know, people that come out and just like to do it. It's an enjoyable thing to do.
Ito walked away from this garage sale with a small gas container and a few DVDs. He and his kids are off to the next one on their list for the day. He says you can find a good deal or not, but you never know until you go look. That sense of curiosity and desire for a good deal is the philosophy that propels all true garage sailors. In Dillingham, I'm Matt Martin.
Well, there's one way of coming back to the bay that's frankly a little bit more exciting than most. Each year, 100 or so boats cross Cook Inlet, trailer up the Williamsport Road, cross Lake Iliamna, and journey down the Quijack River. Most of those boats are drifters. One this year was a set netter. Lindsay Leyland, who grew up in Dillingham, bought a new boat in Homer over the winter and decided to bring it back here via that trip, and she joined me this week. Well, first of all, thanks for coming in and talking to me about this.
Thanks for having me.
This is a trip done usually by drift boats.
Yeah, 32-footers usually. There's a limitation on the size that they can trailer across, so it's, yeah, mostly drift boats.
But you're not a drifter?
No.
Why did you feel inclined to make this trip?
Well, first of all, it's a really sweet trip, but the real reason I did it was because I had a new setnet skiff built in Homer this winter, and not only the funnest way to get it to Dillingham, but probably the most economical way, too, and maybe the safest way, probably not the safest way, was to drive it. And it definitely wasn't going to go around Kodiak. So I figured, I learned there was
no
a road.
No false pass for you.
No false pass in a sentence. Yeah.
Okay, but it's got to be a great trip.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's pretty awesome.
Had you ever crossed the inlet before or been on the...
No, okay. never that far. I mean, I've been out fishing in Kachemak Bay and done that, but I've never really been in Cook Inlet or across Cook Inlet or on the other side at all.
Okay. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about this trip.
Okay. Well, we...
So did you set out on the windiest day?
Fortunately, no. We were actually supposed to leave June 1st, and we didn't because there was a small craft advisory. And then we're like, okay, we'll leave June 2nd. And then there was a small craft advisory. And then we said, okay, we got to get out of here. I got to get to Dillingham, you know, nets to do, plenty to take care of. And so we said, okay, we're going to leave at 4 o'clock in the morning on June 3rd. And then there's supposed to be a small craft advisory the evening of June 3rd. So we're like, we have this little tiny window. Let's do it. If it turns bad, we'll figure it out. But we got to go. So we left it. 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and just straight shot from Homer, from the Homer Spit to Iliamna Bay on the other side.
Williamsport,
yep.
That road, tell me about getting into Williamsport and the guy there.
Yeah, well, it was really good. So the main guy, Ray Williams, we show up.
He's got to be a character.
Yeah, oh my gosh, it was great. I actually sat in the truck with him over the road, and this road is like 15 miles long and ridiculously bumpy, you know, and just one lane, you can't do anything.
And your skiff's on back and trailered.
And my skiff was on a drift boat trailer, so it was just like I had 4 inches on the actual like gunwale on either side that was holding the skiff in place. So every bump, I was like, I was waiting for that boat to just jump right off the trailer. But no, the guy's great. I mean, he was born there. His family, you know, his father founded it in like 1908 or something, really early.
Way back time. Then.
Yeah, way back then. And he just had like story after story after story of all
for
these
this hour long trip up
hour
the road.
Hour and a half.
Hour
yeah.
and a half.
Yeah, I mean, and it was great. And he just told me everything there was to know about Williamsport.
No kidding.
Which is fun. Yeah.
All right, so you cross Lake Iliamna. This probably takes better part of a day.
Yeah, better part of a day, at least 4 hours in a set net skiff, closer to 10 in a drift boat.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about the river?
Oh, man, great. Really shallow. The Quijack braids are really beautiful. Hard to see, you know, when you look at them from the air, it's like this big integral water system. But we're in a boat, and so all we know is the river that we're in. But there's 7 different paths to take at any one time because you could go left or right or middle or front. And so we had a guide, actually. There was a boat in front of us who had hired a guide, and I just followed them.
Okay, so then you come down the river. How long? 8 hours?
What was it? I remember stopping at like 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and we had gone a quarter of the way down the Quijack River, and then we stopped that night and camped. It took a while. I mean, once the river opened up and I got comfortable that I wasn't going to hit anything, I got on step and I cruised down, but it still took us several hours just to get to Lee Lock.
And then past Lee Lock, you're kind of coming to the bay, and that's got to be a nice way to come back to fish, huh?
Yeah, it was good because the water turned muddy and I knew I was at home. And then I hit a sandbar and got stuck for 6 hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah, north. south.
Welcome
of,
back to the
yeah,
bay, huh?
Yeah, exactly. South, and it was just unfamiliar territory. So south of Weevock and north, there's like an old cannery, Nakeen, I think. And we just bumped it and tide was going out and... like, okay, well, we'll get out. You know, I had my waiter. I threw my waders on because we were all in extra tufts and pushing the boat, and it just got shallower and shallower. So we got stuck, and we had to wait until the next flood to get off.
Huh.
But, yeah.
Let's see. Best part of the trip for you?
Oh, man. Honestly, it was driving past Ekuk Point and looking at Clark's and looking at Dillingham and being like, I am home. I made it. You know, it was safe. I know how to get here from this point. I know what to do.
Were you nervous for most of the trip?
The whole time.
Oh, you were?
The whole time. I was stressed out. My heart was pounding. I thought I was going to hit every single bump. Every single time a cloud covered the water, I was like, oh, there's a sandbar. I'm going to hit it. But, you know, I slowed down. It was just the cloud. Didn't so hit it.
Rounding the corner, rounding third, yeah. And coming into home.
Final stretch.
Okay.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Cool. What else did you take away from the trip? Some new country to see, I guess.
Yeah,
for you.
New country. I learned that if you ever ride even in a skiff with an outboard from Naknek to Dillingham around Edelin Point, a Dead Man's Sand will always be there. And I thought, people told me, oh, you can skirt right over it. You're in a little skiff. And not the case. We saw Dead Man's Sand. We saw about 200 or 300 seals on a little sand spit. 8 miles off the coast of the north side of the river, and we missed it, but we definitely saw it. No, but otherwise, yeah, just beautiful country, how to handle a new big boat, and being prepared. You can never be too prepared, and I thought I was totally prepared, but as soon as my GPS batteries died, I was like, what would I do if I didn't have extras? So,
Lindsay Leyland, glad to have you in.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Dave.
And we sent the host of our Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, Molly Dishner, on that same journey on a drift boat this weekend. And we'll be looking forward to hearing more when she gets back next week. And finally this week, Dillingham's local music haunts have heard a new song this spring by Teresa Duncan, a longtime Dillingham Elementary School teacher. Most of us now know it as the Dillingham song, and I asked if she'd play us out this week. I was glad to have her here in the studio with me this morning.
Why do you write and sing music? What inspires you?
I love to walk, and I love to sing. And so I oftentimes hear melodies as I'm singing or whistle. I love to whistle. And so as I'm walking and whistling, I oftentimes will whistle a melody, and then it'll turn into words, and it'll turn into a song, and it's my outdoor recreation.
Okay. Now, you've been here in Dillingham for almost a quarter century.
Yeah, it's hard to believe.
You've written some terrific music. This one that I've asked you to come here and play today is a very Dillingham month of June theme.
Certainly.
Is this new?
Yes. I started whistling that tune, the intro part of the tune. There's two very distinct parts to it. And I thought I wanted to write a Dillingham song, and I've written several that have parts of Dillingham in it, and it was slow and in 3/4 time, if you understand music, and I thought, I don't want to write a 3/4 song. I need something more entertaining than that. So the beginning of it started very different, and then suddenly, early last winter, a fast part came into my head, and I worked on that for a while, and the words came, and it's just fun. It's just a fun song.
Let's let it speak for itself. Can you introduce yourself and the song for me?
I'm Teresa Duncan. This song is the Dillingham song, Life is Right. I'm in Dillingham, that's where I am, and I like it here. I've got good friends, good music, good homemade cheer. I'm happy. I'm healthy, I'm full of good cheer in Dillingham, that's where I am this year. In the summertime, I like to camp and hike, I like to ride to the lake on my old bike, wave to my friends as they pass by or stop and say hi, talk about the berries and the price of flies, fish in the net on the long daylight when companies are coming and the kings are running. Well, life is right if ever someone needs a helping hand, word of mouth spreads and together we band. And if ever
you should feel blue. You know who's the one to spill your guts to? Yeah, in this small town, you know the talk runs wild. Everybody's watching because you're everybody's child. Company's coming when the kings are running and life is right. If ever someone needs a helping hand, word of mouth spreads and together we band. And if ever you should feel blue, you know who's the one to spill your guts to. Yeah, in this small town, you know the talk runs wild. Everybody's watching because you're everybody's child. Company's coming when the kings are running and life is right. In the winter time, I like lots of snow. I like skiing and riding my old snow go. My four-wheel drive gets me to town. The bumps slow me down. I shovel my drive, my roof, my deck. Without my shovel, I'd be inept. Company's not coming because the cold is numbing, but life is right. If ever someone needs a helping hand, word of mouth spreads and together we band. And if ever you should feel blue, you know who's the one not to spill your guts to. Yeah, in this small town, you know the talk runs wild. Everybody's watching because you're everybody's child. Company's coming when the kings are running and life is right. Because I'm in Dillingham. That's where I am, and I like it here. I've got good friends, good music, good homemade cheer. I'm happy, I'm healthy, I'm full of good cheer in Dillingham. That's where I am this year.
Oh, they're both good.
That's fun.
And you can bet that's not the last time you'll hear that song on KDLG this summer. Well, that's it for this week's Bristol Bay and Beyond, our weekly news magazine on KDLG. Catch it Fridays at 12 noon and at 7 o'clock on AM 670 and 8:30 p.m. on 89.9 FM. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Reach us anytime at dave@kdlg.org, news@kdlg.org, or 842-2200 is the news line here at the station. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here next week.